Good morning, honorable members, our guests, the both uninvited and invited voluntary services, welcome. You can see this bottom is too big for only those who are invited. The committee staff and the officials from the department. You know this thing. One MEC in KZN, because people can sabotage you. You send the staff to connect his speech, and when he was on the podium, he just read the first greeting, and then he realized that he was carrying a wrong speech for the occasion. Now, I'm carrying a different agenda for this meeting. Thanks for you. Any apologies?
Good morning, members. The minute is out on official business, not in the country. Send an apology, and Mr. McClella will join us. Due to traffic, he's running late. Thanks, sir.
Okay. No. We appreciate the apology from the minister. But because we're a committee, we want to take independent decisions from a committee. I'm not sure. That's why we don't even record him as a member of the committee. But we just know the apology. We must also apologize to Honorable Matlala in his absentia for starting the meeting late than the time we put, but too early for him to arrive. So please remind me to extend our apology to start the meeting before he arrives. Unfortunately, we have to. We have requested the Center for Applied Studies to brief the committee on the issue of the social and labor plans. I'm sure, just to extend my apology, I didn't ask the names and the surnames, because there's one member in this committee that took me for almost 2 to 3 months to pronounce his surname. So I preferred that people, they introduce themselves. I used to call him Smith, and always be corrected that is Schmidt. So from that day, I have learned a lesson. Don't introduce people if you are not sure. But let me do a favor to yourself and say, because it's me as a chair, I always start from the left and then go towards the right. At the corner there, it's Honorable Schmidt, was a of the committee. Next to him is Honorable Lorimer. That one is very easy. I can even write it in Xhosa, the meaning will still be the same. There is Honorable Nyambi, and there is Honorable Biginini, there is Honorable Mandela. You will note that he is the only one who is standing whilst we are sitting. It's not an act of disrespect, it's an act of respecting the committee. He stands whilst we are sitting. Honorable Luzipo, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. I see Honorable Lorimer, as a rural boy, we used to slaughter, sometimes slaughter the cow. There was one middle-aged man that before we could even open up the animal, already there is something that is putting on the fire to eat. So I can see you want to, before we could even start.
I'm curious, Mr. Chair. I don't even know if I should ask, but you said my surname means the same in Xhosa. What does it mean?
I said you can write it in Xhosa, it will still be almost the same. Lo rima. You want to know it in Xhosa? It says lo yima. Honorable Smith?
Mr. Chair,
you want also your own Xhosa name?
No. Last time I checked, Mr. Chair, it meant, according to the committee, the chief and duna of Israel. Lorima.
You can see it's coming closer to chieftains. Okay, you can then be able to introduce yourself. Gentlemen.
My name is Lubabalo Mapenga from the Center for Applied Legal Studies.
Louis Schneemann, the Center for Applied Legal Studies, attorney in the Environmental Justice and Mining Program.
Robert Klaus from the Center for Applied Legal Studies, a researcher in the Environmental Justice Program.
Okay.
Thank you, honourable members, firstly for the invitation. It's very much appreciated. We're very humbled by it. Today we'll be presenting on the efficacy of the social labour plan system on work that we've done for the last 3 years, in specific relation to the design, implementation and execution of social labour plans. We will walk you through the specific context of the issues that we are dealing with. We'll introduce the specific problems that we found, or challenges rather. We will look at the project plan, the methodology of how we came about to find these specific challenges. My colleagues and I will then furthermore update you with the findings that have come out of this specific research. This is a solution-based research project. We are trying to find solutions to these challenges. We are not here today in any capacity to criticize or anything like that. This is a solution-based project. We put forward certain recommendations, and we hope that these recommendations assist in pushing forward and trying to address these challenges. We'll then finish off a specific presentation with a way forward, and what we see going forward into 2017, and of the further engagements in the future. Just a little bit about us, so you know where we come from, we know where you come from, so it's only fair. The Center for Applied Legal Studies is a civil society organization based in Wits. We're a law clinic, we're a research institution. We've been around for about 40 years. Practice human rights and social justice work with a specific focus on socially, economically and a politically just society. And this specific program is the Mining and Environmental Justice Program. We try and give effect and try and find ways to give effect to the Bill of Rights. And we have 5 basic programs: basic services, business and human rights, which is a new program, environmental justice where mining fits in, gender and the rule of law. Why SLPs? Why this specific area of study? So we're all lawyers. We try and change the public perception of lawyers. We know that lawyers are not seen as the most engaging people in South Africa, but we try and use the law to try and find ways of creatively addressing these specific challenges. But why SLPs? The 16th of August 2012, Marikana, the tragedy in Marikana, I think was a wake-up call for us. I think it was a wake-up call across the industry, across the country, across the world, that there's a persisting inequality that exists in the mining industry. A persisting inequality that is exacerbated by a framework that tries to include but ends up excluding the most vulnerable in society. We started our engagement with, we represented the Human Rights Commission at the Marikana Commission of Inquiry, for the final commission, and here we started to engage with this issue around SLP, started to engage and was triggered by the severe non-compliance that was seen by Lonmin. An example of the 5,500 houses, obviously very committee members are aware of this, honorable members are aware of this, but we asked ourselves the question, is this the only mine that suffers from these specific challenges? Is this the same, is this community the only community that suffered from these challenges? Unfortunately, the answer that we found is it isn't. And this is a systemic problem that is across the entire mining industry. It is not all mines, but it is many of them. And we asked ourselves why. And we wanted to ask ourselves some clear questions. Firstly, are SLPs clear enough to be implementable and enforceable? Do SLPs truly belong to the communities that they're supposed to benefit? In their conception, their design, their execution, and their monitoring. So when we talk about this conception, design, execution, and monitoring, we talk about the life cycle approach. So that's the life cycle of a mine for us. Third, are there areas of systemic failure that can be detected across SLPs? We asked ourselves this question because when you find the illness, you can find the solution. Does the SLP system facilitate integrated government responses to development in mining areas? Is the local economic development in a mining region integrated into all the different role players having roles and responsibilities that they know what they are and are executing them? Does the SLP system lead to systemic inequality? Is the SLP system the appropriate system for the South African landscape? This is a massive question. A huge question that we need to ask ourselves. We've had the MPRDA since 2004 come into effect, 2002 come into effect in 2004. We've had more than a decade of this system. It's time for us to ask the question, has it been working? If not, can it be salvaged? If it can be salvaged, how can it be salvaged? Just a little bit about our project plan. We started in 2014 with the mammoth task of trying to get our hands on 50 SLPs. We submitted PI requests. About 6 months later, we started getting SLPs in. 2015, we assessed 50 SLPs by developing an instrument to an analysis instrument addressing the indicators of effective redesigned SLPs, comprehensiveness, feasibility, so on and so forth. And we released the report that's in front of you today, which is the phase one design phase report. You will see that there's a lot of facts and figures in there. For instance, a very small percentage, 6%, of these SLPs were actually online. Things like that. So we've got a variety of different facts and figures for you. 2016, we launched the report. It was a very successful launch. A lot of the regulators and the mining company were in attendance. A real robust exchange. And we are finding now that everybody is interested in the sector about how we can better the system. We are busy developing a toolkit for communities in a variety of different languages which can break down and assist in understanding and participating in SLPs. This will be launched in 2017 together with the implementation phase report where we've been to 5 different areas: Marikana, Mokopane, Pafuri, aka Chikondeni, Carolina, and Zanin, where a variety of different mining operations occur, and we have done a quasi-audit on a variety of different SLPs, and this This report will come out in March 2017 with the systemic findings that we found. So we will include some of those findings in the presentation today. I'm going to hand over to Robert Cross to take you through the findings. There are about 8 findings. These are findings that are framework findings. And what we try and do with each finding is try and find a legislative gap which results in this finding. Robert, get to that.
Yeah, honourable members, I will take you through the first 5 findings before I hand over to Rubala, my colleague. So, starting with the first finding, and I think the first 2 findings I think that are particularly troubling and significant. The first is there's a lack of transparency in the system. Why is this important? I think the importance is when you go back to why we have SLPs in the first place, which is designed to ensure that mining benefits workers and communities, and the historical legacy of race, class, and gender inequality is overcome. And for this to be achieved, beneficiaries should be able to know what programs they're eligible for benefiting from, and also what companies have done to fulfill them. But also the broader public, because under the MPRDA, it states that the people are, that mineral resources belong to the people and at the state of the custodian. So I think everybody has a right to kind of know how these minerals are being managed. So what are some of our findings? I think the most striking finding was when in each of the 5 communities we visited, they haven't actually seen the SLP itself. And perhaps we shouldn't have been that surprised, because during our phase 1 design desktop study, not a single of those SLPs that we studied provided a comprehensive plan for disseminating SLPs to communities. As I think my colleagues already said, at the time that we were doing research for the design phase, only one of the SLPs was available on the company website. However, we acknowledge that the tide is beginning to, we've seen the tide beginning to turn with Mark Cotroni and those announcements that the company is able to provide SLPs online, and now some companies have followed suit. We are seeing a few SLPs online. And we also acknowledge that foreign mineral resources has plans in the future, in the subsequent regulations, to address transparency and dissemination of SLPs in international regulations. Some of the findings from specific to companies and ease of access of SLPs was we found among companies an inconsistency about who to address prior requests to. Is there a formal information officer, or whether it's legal, is it public relations? It varied a lot, actually. And also we found that the prior manuals, the information often was not correct. Our experiences in lodging requests to Department of Mineral Resources, a recap that we lodged requests to both to kind of test the different ways of accessing SLPs. So the Department of Mineral Resources, we got access to all the 50 SLPs, but we weren't able to access the annual reports the company that submit on their compliance with SLPs, which is also very important. And we also found that there was differences between the DMR, different DMR regions where the documents actually are lodged, because when we lodged requests, we got access from national DMR, but we also had to arrange the obtaining and copying of SLPs to regions. And one of the regions actually did tell us that we needed a separate prior request to the region. Other regions were, such as Limpopo, were really easy to work with, and it was a very quick process of just arranging the date. We've linked some of these problems to some legislative gaps that are enabling this. One is that the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act and regulations don't expressly, in so many words, state that SLPs and companies' annual compliance reports are public documents. And we do acknowledge that the Department of Mineral Resources' current prior manual does include SLPs in the list of documents available on request under Section 15 of PIA. But at the same time, there are caveats there, which can sometimes be used to sue, such as excluding confidential, commercial, and financial information, and to interest in affected parties. And the financial information is the sense that, I mean, the fact is, it's very important to see how much the budget is, how big the financial provision is for SLP, to see how much it's spent. Also, that the, furthermore, that the Act of Regulations don't set out a process that has to be followed to disseminate SLP, where it should be lodged, in what languages, etc. That's not provided for. The second finding, and this closely follows on, is to see the participation deficit in practice. Why is it significant? Again, you go back to that this is meant to be changing the distribution of wealth and power in the mining sector. And given that this program is meant to benefit communities and workers, they're the best place to really articulate their needs and also have the greatest interest in making sure that the programs are full. So we think that should at every stage of the life cycle of design, execution, monitoring and review, they should have an integral role in this process. What have we found? Firstly, in our phase one research on the, how SLPs are designed, we found that only two of the SLPs we looked at actually justified choices of project by reference to what the community said they needed. None of the SLPs provided that full every stage of the SLP 5-year life cycle plan for participation. And when we spoke to in each of the five communities, members, the overwhelming majority of members said that they had not been consulted specifically on SLPs, whether with regard to what they want to see in SLP or implementation. And some of this seems to have had consequences that kind of undermine the intention of the legislature in SLPs, in that some of the communities said that some of the programs, the local economic development programs in SLPs, actually did not fill gaps. Basically, they provided services to the community that you had sufficiently, for example. Like one community had enough care centers, the SLP provided care centers. Also, that communities said that their main point of contact, and many communities have said that their main point of contact is not senior people in the mining companies or in the Department of Rural Resources, but are often consultants to mining companies, people who don't have decision-making power. So we can, again, attribute this to some gaps in the current legislation. Just like with dissemination, is that we don't, nowhere in the Act and Regulations does it really deal with community consultation in SLPs and local economic development in particular, and even the guidelines, which are not fully binding law in the same way, only say that it has to happen. Not really how. There's no process of kind of required notice, period, language, how comments by communities are incorporated, etc. Another thing is that there's no, even though the legislation is totally crystal clear that this needs to happen, there's no real framework or clear formal process for aligning SLPs and municipalities' IDPs, at least there's no legislative guidance on that, and also how to ensure that community voices are also part of that process. But at a more fundamental level, I think communities under our undesirable system unfortunately lack a very important point of leverage, which is the right to, at least in certain circumstances, of very high impact projects, to ever say no to mining. And international human rights law is moving towards a principle that where mining takes place near land owned subject to customary collective land ownership, that there has to be free, prior, and informed consent to development. And that we see as something really important issue that needs to be addressed. The The third finding followed on from the first two findings, and it was more the sense, the feeling that we got from community members. Community members felt kind of abandoned, felt that both government and mining companies weren't listening to their voices, taking their voices, their needs, their concerns seriously, and it felt isolated and not heard. And that's a problem because the MPRDA is designed to and intended to transform the sector. So some of our findings were that community perceptions of they feel that government works for more for the mining companies than for them, and that they don't see enough. They would like to see more of the Department of Mineral Resources in their community. The next theme is that there seems to be an approach up into compliance by mining companies that focuses on like very superficial indicators, the steps are taken, etc., and not on tangible, sustainable results in the community. And when we conducted our interviews, we actually, yeah, sorry, on all members, but when we conducted our interviews, we actually, officials from some of the companies actually in their own admission said that this was a problem in the sector, and the sector was trying to move on to a more substantive approach. However, mining company executives also said that they feel that the Department of Mineral Resources, in assessing their compliance, tends to focus too much on more superficial indicators rather than sustainable, more difficult to measure, but sustainable impact and change. So that was the view from the mining sector. And the next theme relates to the importance of the role of traditional leaders and customary land rights. This is very important because under our current dispensation, there is an imperative of A, land reform, and B, giving real equal recognition to customary law systems of government and customary acts and customary law. And a big part of that law actually is in many different communities, customary law is the principle of something similar to free, prior, informed consent, that decisions that impact on communal land need to be made after the consultation of the broader community. In that sense, some of our findings that we've made were that in the five communities we visited, consultation had primarily occurred with traditional leaders, with the koshi or chief, but not with the broader custody community. There are some quite significant allegations that three of the communities made, which are that at times benefits, FLP benefits, are actually being, instead of going to the most needy or vulnerable members of communities, are sometimes going to traditional leaders and associates and families. And the second problem we observed which is a different way in which customary land rights impact, is that in some cases where there are, say, is community A and is community B. Community A has a customary collective land rights over an area where mining is happening. Community B live just as near, but might have migrated there 20 to 25 years ago, say, and don't have custody rights laws. At the same time, they're immensely affected by existing mines and new mining operations. And we found in a couple of instances that those communities are sometimes left out of excluded from SL social labor plan benefits, but also in one case actually from municipal services. I will now hand over to my colleague Rubala, who will take us through the remainder of our findings.
Honourable members, the first finding that I'll speak about is the lack of alignment between efforts of critical role players. In many of these communities, there are many role players who are affected or can contribute. These go from the community, from the mining sector, and from and the state. And it's important that all of them coordinate and cooperate with each other in terms of the project. The extent to which these communities and these different role players would have to coordinate would obviously differ from project to project. But the example of a school, where there's a school, there still needs to be sanitation, there needs to be electricity, and that's something that the mining company can't do themselves. So it's important that there's alignment between the mining company and the different sectors of government that would be involved. Some of our findings were that specifically from the Marikana Commission, is that Lonmin said that the reason that they were unable to deliver on a lot of the projects is because there was no agreement, or they struggled to get agreement between them and different spheres of local government. We also found that the SLP techs themselves don't clearly delineate which role player is responsible for what task, which obviously affects then the efficacy of the project. The relationship between the IDP and the SLP initiatives remains a contentious one, and there's little consensus about what that relationship looks like or how it is that that relationship can be used for the benefit of the communities involved. At the South African Human Rights Commission hearing, it came out that many other spheres of government said that they themselves didn't have a relationship with the DMR, even though they would be they'd be involved in terms of playing their role, but they don't have a relationship with the regulator of any kind. We found that there is ineffective communication on issues which pertain to local economic development and SLPs. And we also found that there's a significant level of distrust between many other members, between the different role players, often with mining companies not trusting local government to play their part when it came to the many projects that they needed to do. So some of the legislative gaps that we identified. The legislation does not indicate a process by which SLPs and IDPs are aligned. And this is even though often many of the things they're trying to achieve are the same or similar targets. The legislation and policy does not provide guidance for what the respective roles and responsibilities of the central role players is, and that then affects how it is that the project comes to life. The next finding that I'll speak about is the low priority that's accorded to SLPs by mining companies. Now, the fact that there's no compliance with SLPs is well known. At the National Council of Provinces, the Minister for Mineral Resources on 31 March 2015 said that there were 240 mining rights applications that failed to comply with their SLPs. So this is largely because many of the mining companies see SLPs as a form of social or corporate social responsibility as opposed to legal compliance that they need to meet before it is that they can operate. And the result of this is that many of the commitments that they make are then watered down as soon as there's any trouble or turmoil within the company. Some of our key findings were that SLP spending would immediately be cut as soon as the company experienced any kind of financial trouble. If they didn't cut the funding for SLPs, they'd cut the personnel who worked on them, which would then have the same effect, because without as many personnel, they couldn't deliver on their SLP commitment. There's also inconsistency between companies themselves. This is both in terms of the specific structures or what the departments that work on SLPs look like, and also the extent to which resources are directed there. This could be solved by a greater standardization for the allocation of SLP responsibility within companies that requires managers to assume the most responsibility. So then the legislative gap. I think it's important to note here is that even though we point out a legislative gap, the majority of the problems are as a result of compliance monitoring and enforcement more than it is in this instance of legislative gaps. But the problem is that a lot of the information around the content of SLPs isn't located in regulation or legislation, which would be binding, but it's more in guidelines, which is what's supposed to give meat to the SLPs. The last finding that I'll speak about is the coordination or the lack of coordination between different companies and SLPs. So there are many commuters who live in areas where there are many different mines, and this presents risks and opportunities. Mainly the issue is that because there's more than one mine, the effects of mining on that community are compounded and made that much worse. And coordination could then avoid duplication, could make it easier to pool resources, and it would make it more likely that community issues that could be resolved are missed. Some of our findings in this area was that it wasn't very common for there to be coordination in relation to SLP and delivering on SLP commitments. So a particular issue was that many different companies who would be working in that community would focus on the same thing. So an example of something very popular is farming cooperatives. So they'd have many smaller farming cooperatives instead of pulling their resources together so that they could have a big farming cooperative which could better serve the community. So some of the reasons why it is that there isn't this coordination is because there's suspicion between the companies themselves, often big companies being unwilling to work with small companies in order to deliver on commitments, out of a fear that those companies would be piggybacking on their commitments. The many different procurement systems between the companies make it difficult for the companies to work together so as to deliver on SLP commitments. And also there's a suspicion on the part of DMR that companies would want to hide under the efforts of other companies and not deliver on their commitments themselves. So some of the legislative gaps that we've identified are that companies are not required at all to coordinate SLP commitments. In fact, what a lot of the companies have said is that they would like to coordinate in terms of SLP commitments, but they themselves don't know how they'd be credited in terms of compliance for that when they work with another company. So that's a gap that could potentially be fixed in terms of legislation, where there'd be a clear delineation on how it is that those problems or that crediting system would work for compliance purposes. And the legislation and regulations do not identify a mechanism for ensuring that mines and SLPs in a municipality are part of a comprehensive plan that adds to the municipality's existing budget and raising IDPs. I'll now get back to you.
Thank you, Roberto. Honourable members, just going to summarise, and then we can go into a discussion about these particular points. Firstly, we think it's critically important to give effect or understand the impact of non-consultation with regards to the design and implementation of SLPs. Free and prior informed consent is a starting point. I think free and prior informed consent, there's been a lot of work around it, so we can start with that specific issue and try and move forward on what type of engagement suits SLP consultation best. We put forward recommendations with regards to requiring agreements, not just between companies, labor, state, but communities as well. In a variety of other jurisdictions in Africa and around the world, communities are engaged with benefit sharing agreements that make them parties to this contract. In South Africa, we have a bit of a different system where we have pooled that role into a regulation space, and the state acts on behalf of the communities where it's the exclusionary process leads to them not not being aware of the SLP commitments and not being able to participate in the execution of them. Working community inclusion, I think this is just in the entire life cycle. And we see an opportunity here. We understand that there are capacity constraints within the Department of Mineral Resources with regards to monitoring compliance and so on. What about training community members and raising awareness about SLPs and creating a community monitoring program? It's somewhere to start. I think that if communities are incredibly keen to be involved, it's what we have found. A fund established to access experts to participate and understand impact. It's a power dynamic that exists at the initial stage of mining operation, where communities are always on the back foot, and companies hold the power. They have the experts, they have the resources, they have the money. Communities, we suggest, need their own experts to understand impact, to break down the specifics of what the mining company is going to do in the area and how they can assist in mitigating that harm. Formal integration of SLP and IDP processes. This is something that we saw in every single area that we were in. An enormous misalignment between local government planning and development and the SLP planning and development, which in a sense, we are finding that local economic development is happening in a very siloed fashion. We need to have an integrated model of local economic development. There's resources available in the mining sector. There's resources available to alleviate a pressure that is on municipalities from an LED point of view. Let's use it. And let's use it in an aligned fashion. But we need a framework in order to do that. Cooperative governance. This is obviously vertically, horizontally as well. But we also see this, and this is a point that Lubabalo raised with regards to regional coordination. This, again, speaks to this integrated development planning method that is currently not happening. And we are seeing enormous overlap and also enormous gaps that are created by under integrated planning between mining companies. So I think there is an opportunity there to build mining affected communities appropriately with the resources that are available. Grievance mechanisms. It is, in our opinion, not enough that the mine manager's phone number or the sustainability manager's phone number be on an SLP. Communities are incredibly frustrated by the process of addressing grievances. And we found that this leads to protracted arguments and protracted and a loss of trust. And this can be solved by creating real structures that community members are involved in, workers are involved in, where we see grievance mechanisms being apportioned the right amount of weight. Compliance based on tangible impact. Now, my colleague mentioned not tick boxes. Now, tick boxes for us, we have to see it's not just about building a school, but it's about what impact that school has. And are they teachers? Has the Department of Education been consulted? Has the municipality? Is everybody on board? I'm making light of it because but I think it's incredibly difficult thing to do, I understand that, but we need to have a plan to do this. Critical details contained in guidelines rather than hard law. We have regulations that do work. The problem is that they're non-binding. I think there's quite a nice intervention that can be made there with regards to legitimizing and formalizing certain guidelines. For example, the requirement to consult and participate in SLP design is in the guidelines. So something like that could be advanced. Adequacy of definitions, community, the definition of community, the definition of labor sending areas. The reason I bring this up is that when communities are defined and beneficiaries are defined, it's sometimes very difficult to understand where they start and where they end. Some companies use a radius, 5 kilometers around the mine, 15 kilometers around the mine. Others use the municipality. Others use specific groups. We're trying to get some sort of input into that could be helpful. compilation of clarity, feasibility, consultation, authorship. A lot of the projects, not a lot, but a disturbing amount of the projects, local economic development projects, and poverty eradication projects fail because there wasn't feasibility analysis done on the project. They were just put into the SLP and say, we'll see what happens. Real long-term planning and feasibility on how these projects are actually going to work and what type of impact they're going to have could help. Clarity in roles and responsibilities. As said, currently there's an enormous amount of discretion that lies with the companies. And they have raised themselves that if we had a framework which identified the roles, the individual role play, this could be a lot easier to have. The amendment process. For us, also low-hanging fruit. Amendments to social and labour plans, revision of targets can happen in the consultation with the department or it's ministerial, but it's a delegated authority. There's absolutely no consultation that needs to happen with these amendments. Now, amendments can be small, and we understand those amendments maybe don't need to be exhaustive and consulted, but where there are major amendments, for instance, the revision of targets, for instance, in housing, there are examples that we can give where maybe 1,000 houses were dedicated over a 5-year cycle. Yet on every annual basis, these targets are revised and diluted to a point where these targets are then sitting at, say, 180 houses over a 5-year period and diluted to such an extent that the impact is minimized, yet it's illegal, and people don't know about it. So in a 5-year time, I'm waiting for my house, but I'm not getting one, but I haven't been told that I'm waiting. So there's a lot of issues that are brought up by that. I think the point to start, and I'm glad the movement that we've made, we've seen enormous progress. I can name a couple. Harmony, Lonman has even done it, Anglo-American. These companies have put their social labor plans on their website. And I think this is a move in the right direction. We can start there. Get the information out. We're going in the right direction. And I understand that the department has made certain provisions for the future, but I think this has to be a non-negotiable. And it's a point where we have to start. Access to information, actually the process of getting the document. Financial parameters. Determining the financial provision. Huge variety that we see. There's no standard approach to this is the impact of the mine, these are the kind of benefits that we need to give out. We're seeing mines of the same size with varying degrees of impact. And this impact is a very difficult thing to assign and to know what an impact is, but there needs to be a more standard way of addressing that. Regulate consultants. One SLP out of 50 that we found actually had the author. You might ask, but surely the mine is the author. In the majority of the times, not. In the majority of the times, the consultants are contracted to draft the SLP, and we don't know what their qualifications are, who they are, what experience they have in this area. Anybody can draft an SLP. I can draft an SLP. So we need to have some sort of understanding about who these people are that are doing it. Sanctions and recourse. What is non-compliance? For us, this question is fundamental. We see 60%, 70%, 80% fulfillment of targets being seen as compliance. Yet, that's a dilution of the target. And in our mind, under a strict compliance rule, that isn't compliance. I know there are reasons given a lot of the time for not fulfilling SLP targets, but really, putting forward a 50% of an SLP target and not fulfilling it, we need to understand where compliance actually sits. Maybe litigation will help in that. We don't know. As I said, regulate consultants. Linking commitments to commodity prices. Something that happens quite a lot in the SLPs, just under 50% of the SLPs that we examined link their commitments directly to the commodity price. So for instance, they'll have a gold price and say, if this specific commodity price drops under this level, we will then have to revisit our SLP commitments. Now, I understand that mining companies have a certain amount of money that they can address this, but in our opinion, the impact remains. They're not stopping mining. The impact remains, yet the benefits are being diluted. And the way to address this is maybe a rainy day fund. When the going's good, you need to put money away in order to address the issues when it goes bad. We know that the mining industry is cyclical. It's always up, and it's going to always go down, but it's always going to come back up. So when it comes up, let's look forward. Develop SLP capacity within communities. Communities are hungry to learn and to hear about SLPs and want to be involved. That's the general feeling that we got. And when we go into these, just to tell, when we go into these various mine affected areas, the first thing we do is we hire their SLP and we present it to them as a starting point. That's the first time they've ever seen it. Yet mining's been happening for 15, 20 years. But they want to be involved, they want to know how to use it, and hopefully the toolkits will assist in that. And we have to work with the DMR in sharing around these toolkits, making them better, getting your input on them, so on and so forth. Detailed templates for mining companies. The inconsistency in the variety of SLPs is staggering. And I understand that mining companies are small, large, multinational, so on and so forth, but you can't have an SLP that's 18 pages and another one that's 350. You need to have real, substantial requirements and templates for companies to use. And the last question, the last query I'll raise is that the training and qualifications for official assessing SLPs. This specific area is incredibly complex. We don't deny that. But I think that there needs to be training for the people that are assessing these things and assistance, because I think it's very frustrating for them as well. And also capacitation within the department, I think, will assist. And maybe we could talk about how many people are actually sitting and trying to review compliance of, say, 300 mines in one area, you know, on an annual basis. 3, 4, 5? Lastly, going forward, we're going to release this phase 2 in 2017. You will all be invited, obviously. Dinner's on us. But hopefully we can talk about these specific issues. Last time, members, together with key role players, national government, local government, communities, labor, we started talking about this, but there'll be further engagement. We also released the toolkit for communities. And then in 2017, we're going to put our 2 years of research together, our design phase and our implementation phase, into a book that hopefully we can use practically. But in conclusion, I think the feeling that we've got from everybody that we've engaged with is that the system is not working right now. But there are positives to the system. There are things that do work. But really the real impact that we're trying to get is not being affected due to blockages and obstacles. That the law can actually help in releasing. I thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thanks for welcoming us, Honorable Mokwena and Honorable Maforo. Accept our apology to start early than your time. We apologize for starting early before you could arrive. We know you are not late, you are delayed. You see, let me acknowledge your lawyers, ne? I'm not my lord. this is how we do it, ne? Like you said, we are not asking questions for sustaining or winning a case. But we prefer that where I started, I can give you if you don't have. We allow members, all of them, those who want to ask questions. And then you can choose who answers which question and who answers what question. So we don't give someone to answer one question and then you respond, because there could be a follow-up once the other one is idly to ask his or her own question. So I hope you'll be able to record the questions, and then you share the questions amongst yourselves. But also, where you feel possible, there will be a need for maybe there are comments that you would wish to clarify on them. You will be free to do so. We won't discuss with you. We'll seek clarity, and then on what you have raised, we will then discuss amongst ourselves, so that you don't get accused of being a member of parliament without taking the oath or affirmation. But thanks very much for the report. Honourable members, there is a presentation. Honourable Lauren, as long as your hand is not like this, it's okay. I don't want to sympathize you on something. I don't know what is it that is affecting you. Now I see your hand was like this, not like this. I was going to ask, what is it that is affecting you on this presentation that makes you so miserable? Your hand was up, ne? Okay. Honourable Mokwena, Honourable Schmidt, Honourable Lorima, was your hand up? Honourable Tiginini, Honourable Mande. I will tell you one day, one man who came to a meeting, and when he came into the meeting, we were not sure how did he hear what was being said in the meeting. He went through the door and his hand was up already. Honourable Mukwe.
Thank you, Chair. The... No, thanks. The... Yeah, I think it's a very interesting presentation. You know, Chair, one of the most debilitating deviations that South Africa has had since 1994 was the deviation from the principles of the Freedom Charter, which said that the land and the mineral resources beneath the soil shall be transferred into the hands of the people. And I think it was a crucial deviation, because what we then did since 1994 is to put the power in the hands of capital. And we didn't transfer the land and the mineral resources beneath the soil into the hands of the people. And I think this is what this presentation is speaking to. It's speaking to disempowered communities. And I like what you said in your closing remarks. When you said that the mining companies come with resources, and they come empowered with knowledge and information and all kinds of things, and they're dealing with communities that are disempowered in that space, and that it's a very crucial point. It worries me, because it begins even before we get into that SLP space. In Kolobeni, for instance, the war between the state, community, and the mining company is centered around these arguments that the mining company has the power. They have the power to present an EIA that the department is not able to assess, or to make sure whether it will do what it's supposed to do. And the community is sitting without knowledge. They don't know what they need to know. And perhaps this is something that Chair, that we need to look at in terms of legislation, in terms of empowering just the department, finding ways of empowering communities. I'm glad that you've mentioned Marikana, because I think it's a classic case, especially once these mining companies are up and running and so on and so forth. My worry is that in general, and it's not just while the mine is already in operation, that in general, even before the mining, the mine starts, during the operation of the mine and after the mine. In Velkom, for instance, it's a classic case of the after the operation of the mine effect. So the entire spectrum, from beginning to end, of the operation of the mine, the community is simply disempowered, and that is I think it's one of the most crucial points that we have to look at as a state, as to how we're treating our people. The entire purpose of 1994 was to transform society so that we're able to empower communities and their rights. It's just a comment. I'll come back. Let me just end there for now.
Honorable Schmidt, I'm sure you can answer the ideological class. Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It always strikes me that these presentations are always from a particular view. And as you would know, there's always two sides to every coin. And we don't have the other side of the coin here, we have the one side. So maybe some of my questions would indicate our lack of having the other side presented. So you always fall in the trap of seeing the one side of the argument, but not the other side. So if I may have a question which may question the reliability of what you say, credibility of what you say, look at it from that perspective. But I think two things. One is the mining sector is always treated differently because of the fact that it works on non-renewable resources. And therefore, government says, like Mr. Mkwena, that there's royalty and there's all other kinds of additional responsibilities placed on mining companies. But isn't the bottom line eventually that whatever cost you add, it has an impact on your resources, your reserves, what becomes mineable paid? That's the bottom line. So you keep on adding cost, your reserves just become less, and the profitability of that mine just becomes less. So you've got to bear that in the bigger context. That's the bigger context. I'm not saying SRPs are wrong or social or community trusts are wrong. I'm just saying that's the bigger context. But having said that, the social and labour plans you said were not on the website because on the face of it, it appeared to contain confidential commercial and financial information, which was apparently what I understand the argument of the mining company. Did it contain, when you eventually received those SLPs, did it contain those kind of information from your point of view? Was it a just explanation or was it, in your view, could it have been released earlier on? Or was there another reason which you established why it was not on the website? I'm trying to get a bigger picture. Then, secondly, and once again, I preface it by saying I'm not against SLPs. In fact, it can be very good too. But it should also be seen with, as you say in one of your slides, that you did not obtain annual compliance reports. Would that not have been assisting in determining, hey, here's the SLP, there's a compliance report? So that would have at least indicated the other side of the coin. This is what the mine believes it has done, and therefore, in rands and cents, this is what it has supplied. Because you would agree, I mean, I'm not an engineer, but installing or implementing underground services is a massive amount of money for very little you see above ground. So what I'm trying to indicate is what you may see and what may have been delivered may, on the face of it, by visiting a particular site, be totally at a disjuncture, because you don't know what the cost of underground services may have amounted to. I'm giving that as a kind of an argument. The other, and I like your positive energy. There's clearly a lot of energy. I seem to be aware of certain problems concerning community trusts. Massive problems. Bakhatla Bapapiri, I think it was in the Northwest, being swindled out of hundreds of millions of rand. Hundreds of millions. Because provincial government in the Northwest, as I understand it, the money is gone. Wherever it's gone to, it's either in houses or cars, or but it's gone. And that's community leaders, traditional leaders. Sometimes with the knowledge and concurrence of traditional society, sometimes not. Now, that's why I give you the other example, because the one is the wonderful notion of coordination and consultation and discussion. But when it comes down, when the tar hits the rubber, or the rubber hits the tar, rather, it for some reason fails. I don't know what the causes are. There are probably a myriad of causes which we don't understand at the moment. So, what do you foresee community participation to be when provincial government, in that instance, swindled certain societies out of hundreds of millions of rand, mining companies not having any control over those funds because it pays into, I think it's called a D account. The only other form of I'm talking about real-time consultation, is either with a councillor, with a ward committee. We've had some examples, and some examples of how it works and it doesn't work. Others are meetings. You know how meetings are attended by different people at different stages. It's fraught with complexity, it's fraught with non-attendance, it's fraught with a major concern. So you're, insofar as you've identified problems, it's fine. Maybe one would understand your reasoning if you were to give some form of possible ways of addressing these issues, because, you know, it's a, I always say, uncertainty is worse than certainty in instances where it works against you, but at least you know what the realm is of what whichever framework you need to work. So, you know, I think that's basically where I'd like to end off, but it's part of a major problem. And why I'm saying it's a major problem, local government should be the coordinating instance of any infrastructure, any social development within its local area, jurisdictional area. And I don't think it's a secret, but services are not being delivered as it should be. So it's not only a mining company problem, it's a local government problem. And I guess to a certain extent a community problem. And a DMR problem, and you've indicated it. But what do you do in resolving it from your perspective, from your real time going out there, when a local government is not delivering the service that it should, when it should be tying in? As I understand, the mining company should be speaking to the local government to see how do you fit in with the IDP. Mining companies are saying, but they don't even get a reply. They don't even know who to speak to at local government. So you can't blame it on the mining companies only. So that's why, if a report is made on a basis where you appear on your own, you need to show the site on a fair basis, because it you then drift into your way of seeing the one side, not the other side. You follow what I'm saying? Maybe there's a comment more than a question. Thank you.
Thank you for a very thought-provoking presentation. If you can hear, you've opened the door on philosophy and ideology wide open. So I'm not going to hold back, I'm afraid. Transparency is key, one of the keys. If something is not transparent, in my view, it's there so that it will enable corruption. One of the big problems of the system is that if everything is imprecise and hidden, everybody will try and get away with everything. Mining companies will try and get away with spending less. Officials will try and use whatever power, discretionary power they have to make money. It's going to happen. It has to end. I think there is some welcome progress in this regard. Just a specific question, and maybe you'd like to tell me, and I've got very few specific questions here, because the rest is just discussion, or mostly discussion. Which of your five regions of the DMR did you find least transparent? The concept of SLPs is fundamentally problematic. I'll tell you a little story in this regard. And the committee went and visited a coal mine in the Mpumalanga last year, and came across a very brilliant young mining engineer who discovered new ways to mine pillars in old underground coal mines. And I privately asked him during the course of the walkabout what the most difficult part of his job was. And he said running the bakery. So the question is, why is a mining engineer ending up having to run a bakery in town? There's a major conceptual problem here for me. And I think that possibly we need to be looking at SLPs that have a much more limited scope than what they have at the moment. And just as a sort of top of my head suggestion, perhaps it should be ensuring that anybody who suffers loss from the presence of a mine in the community is compensated. So that's probably focusing on environment, and it's probably focusing on the working conditions of people at the mine. On that, I don't think you can realistically expect companies to sign up to the mission of politicians. Politicians, we have a mission of getting people out of poverty. That's not what a mining company is going to do. I think it's unrealistic just to expect them to sign up to that. And it'd be nice if they would, but it's not going to happen. So, of course, they're going to use consultants. It's not the core business of the mine. SLPs are too often used as an excuse for government failure. They don't deliver services. Well, who can deliver services? The one organization in the area which can is the mine. Everything gets chucked onto the mine. Well, the mine is responsible for everything in the end. Local government and its officials get away with it. So we must be careful of that. Interesting, your point about communities feeling abandoned. Well, of course they're going to be abandoned. They are not actual actors in this process. One of the consequences of nationalizing mineral rights is that there only are two actors. There are the companies and there's the government. Everybody says, well, government should be acting on behalf of communities, but they're not. Unfortunately, the only way to ensure that companies interact properly with people in the community is to give those people some power. In other words, to give them power over the mineral rights. And this is where I have an interesting discussion ahead of me with my friend from the EFF, because the surest way of empowering poor people is to give them the mineral rights. It would be, I've put this to a mining lawyer who threw up his hands in horror. He said, well, you're going to tell me that I have to deal with 200 people in a community to get secure mining rights. That may be, but it's also one sure way that everybody's rights will be safeguarded if the mine is forced to deal with every person in that community and make sure that they're adequately compensated. But you know, the question is then, well, can we unscramble the omelette caused by nationalizing mining rights? I'm glad you've identified the difficulty in deciding what a community is. Any community is a mass of conflicting interests. And I don't think I've yet found a community that is united, and we shouldn't expect them to be. Everybody has different interests. It's hellish difficult to deal with them. Obviously, when a mine goes in, it's going to be faced with this problem. Well, who is the community? What is the community? The easiest thing to do is to go to the traditional leader. Say, right, this guy's the community. They deal with him. The problem with traditional leaders, of course, is they're not accountable. You can't unelect a traditional leader. The problem is that we've seen with results. Just the danger in SLPs is that, I'll use another example. Ivanplats, this big mine up in Limpopo, this new mine, employs something like, I think, about 45, 46 community liaison officers. They're not even mining properly yet. They put a lot of effort into this. But this suggests that the only mines which are ever possible are those run by big capital, because no smaller mining company or new entrant to the mining sector is ever going to be able to reproduce that kind of personnel infrastructure. They just won't, which means that our mining sector will be in the hands of big capital forever. I mean, that's not really what we want. We want to spread the benefits. Free prior and informed consent, nice idea, but not part of the system. I've talked about that already. We're really talking about the state. And again, you know, there's community and there's community. People are talking about Polokwane, for instance, sort of classic community. There are smaller communities. I'm just thinking of a person whose family farmed mealies at Delmas for 100 years, and all their farm workers thrown off the mine because they don't have a choice. So we're then left with the big question, well, currently it's in vogue to say, well, shouldn't Polokwane be allowed to say, well, there's no mining on our land? Well, if you say that, well, then everybody should be allowed to say that. And I think the key, again, comes down to compensation. If you're going to mine, make it worthwhile for the people who live there. Just on Polokwane, I mean, I think, as an aside, I think we should all be quite worried about what's happening there. There is a lot of uncertainty. The holiday season is coming. I know that people in the area are fearing a renewed outbreak of violence. There's an uncertain status about the moratorium there. I'll just put that as an aside. So, in the end, I think the question is, can we get SLPs right if we haven't tackled the fundamentals? And I don't think we have. I think not enough attention is being paid to them. The start is good. Transparency is a good place to start. I agree the system isn't working, but there are positives we can get out of this. The system has to change, but we have to sort out the fundamentals, because until then, everything else is just palliative. I think I'll stop there.
Thank you very much. Let's really welcome your presentation. It's quite provoking. But it basically, in her mind, it's simple. It's not going to be a long one. You know, it's good when you say to us that this SLP was coming from those companies. Then ours would be very good to hear what is the response of the DMR on those findings that they're having, as they are working with them all the time. But they might not have that. You see, where we are feeling on our own, where we are feeling, it really is that we were always saying before 94, people's vision for people's power. This thing was deprived from us. Now, we can't just talk as if we are not coming from any imbalances of the past. Now, these imbalances, these multi-millionaires, when they arrived in this country, they were given by a platter these resources that they are having. Ours now, we want to transform that particular matter. That's where we are busy with. Now, that's why this blame gaming keep on coming to this government, which this government has a responsibility to imbalances of the past. Now, can you really say to us, in 388 years, can be balanced by 22 years in government? To me, it can't. But we are trying to deal with those remnants in this, you know, in this particular round. I want to start to preface my argument on that light. We're not defending these 22 years that in government, because we're together in this government. You must understand we're in power sharing, and we agreed on that. But the blame side is always put on the other side, the ruling party. And we can't live that life. So, I'm very pleased with your argument, you know, that you are putting on the table. But I think it's very really to say, I will suggest, normally I don't want to ask questions. We have a responsibility in this table to put solution to this problem. That's my understanding. Now, you know, first and foremost, I think it's very good to start to revive those communities. I think we need to start there. I think your observation or your recommendation on challenges is correct.
to see that who these communities were talking about. What type of cultures of those, because there are cultures again on those communities. You know, it's not smooth sailing when you go there. Hence, you have to follow certain, you know, traditions and cultures that exist in that particular communities. I know that's how we are operating. Now, that particular question moves more to the last question, but it's not really a question. You see, when you establish anything, you know, we established something, peace, conflict, and resolution one time, when there was infighting in this country, when they were banning things, everything, in the 80s. Then we formed a peace for conflict resolution and development. It was operating in UPE. Now, in that particular one, that time we're intervening in this situation we define ourselves in that particular time. Ourselves, once we deprive rights, we try to bring solution to that. Now, on your own now, I understand that in your particular area where you come from Vase, you see the need to intervene. Now, we're receiving some particular money and some particular people at that particular time in order to sustain the program to a busy way. Now, I want really to go there to say, who supports you, who helps you with doing this particular way? Because that's what I wanted to know, so that I'm able to say it's going to last longer or not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I may also, like my colleagues, appreciate and welcome the presentation by the Center for Applied Legal Studies at the Witwatersrand University. Honorable Chair, through you, let me just ascertain clarity on two or three matters. It is been said here that the communities which these SLPs are operating in are not totally reflective of the communities. In your own understanding, how should that community structure be? Who should it consist? Particularly in a communally owned area, as led by the traditional council, because there's always the misconception that communal land is led by a traditional leader. It is actually a traditional council. So I'd like to gain an understanding in your thinking of how this SLP structure ought to be in communal areas. But also taking into account the role played by traditional leaders who are somewhat, are not equally funded as to look at their sister department, cooperative governance, because the department is cooperative governance and traditional affairs. A lot of emphasis is put on cooperative governance with a lot of funds going to support municipalities in SALGA. Not the same amount of funds is directed to traditional leaders and capacitating traditional leaders in the National House of Traditional Leaders, Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, and the Regional House of Traditional Leaders. And in your own assessment, what then is being done in this SLP structure to ensure that the structure of traditional house of National House of Traditional Leaders is actually seen right down to the ground, from the National House of Traditional Leaders to Provincial House of Traditional Leaders to the Regional House of Traditional Leaders and the traditional councils themselves on the ground, so that we are able to see clear, transparent empowerment for people living in rural communities. Honorable Chair, also in terms of the mining houses, as reflected in the presentation. There is the minister did announce that there's about 240 mining rights which have failed to comply with the SLP. I'd like to understand, what do you think the causes of that have resulted in the failure have been, and if these mining houses have failed, what do you think the repercussions ought to be? Is it fair to look at withdrawing the mining right from the applicants if they haven't been able to deliver on their SLP? Thank you.
Yourself and give a balance view. Greetings, Honorable Matlala. Again, an extended apology to you to start before you arrive. What I like about you is that for the first time I see you, when you sit in a chair, you sit backwards so that I can't see you. Your presence is well appreciated. Not that you were missed. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, thank you for the insightful comments. Honourable Mokoena started with the question about the fundamentals. The fact that we need to change the fundamental structure of the mining rights process and ownership of the minerals in order to address the challenges and create leverage. In relation to the SLP, what does that mean? The SLP, in our view, is supposed to be this mechanism that ensures that even though there are two parties to this negotiation, that the communities are front and center of that negotiation, and this mechanism is supposed to facilitate and ensure that there is local economic development and poverty eradication as a license condition. Now, the end goal, and let's not, the mining goes ahead and the operation goes ahead and the mine closes. What that SLP is supposed to do, it's supposed to ensure that the community, whether or not there was a community there or whether there was population influx when the mine existed or where there was an existing community, is that the community can stand on its own once the mine closes. That is the end goal of an SLP. And that's why we talk about this life cycle. And at the moment, we are seeing the economic heartbeat of communities being pulled out when the mine leaves. What does that tell me? It means that SLPs are not working. And does that mean that there is a fundamental question we need to ask about the empowering provisions that give effect to SLPs, the way in which mineral rights are conferred, and the way in which communities are left out of the process? One of our first findings when we looked at this was that this is basically an exclusionary process. That needs to change. And I think the fundamental theoretical questions need to be answered. I think in 94, there was a lot of focus on giving the power to the people with regards to minerals. And it says it in the NPRDA, in the preamble, that all of the minerals in South Africa belong to the people. But does it really? And this is the question we need to ask ourselves. We say it in legislation, but is that legislation conflicting in its regulation? And I think it is. And my colleague, Robert, believes in a hybrid system, which I will let him explain. But we cannot make this a strictly regulatory process. I believe that there needs to be some sort of contractual agreement made with communities in particular, like in other jurisdictions. But I think we need to answer those fundamental questions. And I can give you a little insight into our next report. The last question we answer in our conclusion is the SLP system salvageable? And we say not without addressing the fundamental challenges of how mining rights are concerned. It's easy as that. It's not easy as that, but that's the simple answer. All these recommendations that you see there, most of them will be addressed by creating leverage. Can we answer that question for you right now? I can't answer that question for you right now. But I think it's an important discussion to have, and I think more study needs to go into what happens in other jurisdictions and how that works, and how people are actually obtaining benefits. With regards to the question about Honorable Schmidt asked with regards to the confidentiality of and did we see confidential information? Now, my response to that would be, what is confidential information? Is this facts and figures? Because if so, an SLP is made of facts and figures. And you can't understand the content of an SLP if you don't understand how much money is being spent. In our mind, an SLP is a form of contract between the state and the mining company to say, you want to mine, this is your impact. You have to offset that impact through this specific set of plans and rules. I do not think that the information contained in the SLP is confidential at all. And I think it's not confidential because it's a statement of fact. This is what we plan to spend. And this is how it's broken down. And these are the projects that we commit to. With regards to the annual reports, we did receive some annual reports. I'll give you some insight. There was some amazing responses. Not everything is doom and gloom here. For instance, De Beers, when they received the access to information application, they picked up the phone, they said, cancel it. The boxes will be on your door tomorrow morning with annual reports. Why is that? Why are not our companies not following suit with that? AngloGold Ashanti, they said, oh, no, did you look on the fourth page of our website? Oh, sorry, we didn't. There it is, with annual reports. This is corporate culture we're talking about. This is something that I think is, when you look at a system and you see that some people are doing it this way and some people are doing it that way, you've got to ask why the other people are doing it that way. What is there to hide? I must say, the engagement with the DMR, I think we frightened them a bit, and I admit for 50 SLPs on the PI application, I mean, that was a large amount. But they engaged with us, and after a couple months, because how it happens is you apply to the national department. The national department. You apply. Get close, okay. But when you apply to the national department then addresses your concern or your application, gives a verdict, which was positive in our regard, and then they have to send that approval through to the regional office where the records are actually kept. That's where the blockage started for us. Questions were asked about which specific region was the worst. Now, I'm not in the name of naming and shaming here, but I will. with regards to the Northwest, We got, for instance, a full approval from the National Department. The Northwest would only give us local economic development sections of the SLP. Only. No matter how much we told them, this is the line of accountability is with National. National said yes. no, 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 we are endangering the third-party rights of the mining company. Make of that what you will. In the example of Mpumalanga, we found that an incredible difficulty, even after we got the approval, the provincial department, the regional department, wanted a direct application to them for another pyre because they weren't comfortable with it. Also, they struggled to find the plans. Now, what does that mean? If you're struggling to find the plans, how are you performing compliance assessments? They wanted us to give them farm names. I don't know the farm names, which directs my concern to record keeping. How are these records being kept? And there's a finding in the report. The question in and around trusts and traditional leaders that was raised. The thing that we're asking for is, and the thing that we recommend, is that there be a formal framework for consultation. Let's start there. This is because we have it in the environmental sphere. We have very specific. We have dates. We have where the documents are kept. We have all of these things. I think from a social point of view, I almost think like the social considerations in the mining industry are the younger nephew of environmental. Environmental have made leaps and bounds with regards to consultation, yet social, which is as if not more important, have not made those leaps and bounds. Why not align these types of consultation frameworks? And we also, in our recommendations, ask for a community consultation plan to be in a social data plan. Make a little section that says, this is how we will disseminate this document. These are the people that we have connected with and been partnered with. This is how, over the next five-year cycle, this is how it will happen. And we will have quarterly consultation meetings with the groups of people that we have. It's incredibly difficult. I understand what I'm saying here. We're in a community has 100,000 people in it. How do you do that? We have to start with a framework. We have to say, this is the way in which we consult. There's been favorable litigation, Beng Wenyama, in the case of consultation in the environmental space, has been a landmark judgment in terms of honest, true consultation and what that is made out of. And it forms part of notice and forms of a true intention to which I don't think is happening in the social sphere. I think I will give the hard questions to Rob, but I just want to say that this question about local economic development and I understand what you're saying. We're human rights lawyers. We're going to have a point of view, and it's going to be one that sits more to the left. But we are academics, and we are trying to be as objective as we can here. In terms of, I just want to answer the question, and we can go to my colleagues about where we come from, and who supports us, and how this will go forward. So the Center for Applied Legal Studies is housed within the law school of Wits. We have various donor funders as well. This particular project still has another year of funding in 2017, so we will continue this work. We're not going anywhere with this. We have a variety of different funders. If you'd like a list, I'm happy to print that out. It's very transparent. You can see our annual reports. What we are trying to do here, this is also the beginning of a cycle for us, and just to tell you where we're going with this, is that we see ourselves as lawyers trying to find clarity in this through the courts as well. We are lawyers, we like to litigate, we now think we know what we're talking about, now let's take this to the courts and see what happens. This is not a warning or a shot, this is just saying, I think it's important for us to test this. The question about what is non-compliance, let's test that in the court. Let's see if 60% of the full target is compliant and the reasoning behind that, so on and so forth. I am sympathetic to mining companies when it comes to the issues that they have. through the, so just to inform you, the participants of this 2016, launching a 2017 study, the implementation phase, was not just the five communities. We interviewed every single municipality, local economic development manager, and spatial planning manager. We then interviewed a variety of different mining companies, which were, strangely enough, very keen on getting their side of the story, which is important. We interviewed a variety of consultants, which was also eye-opening, and the struggles that they have. We didn't just focus on communities, because there is two sides to every coin. And I can tell you this now, companies are just as frustrated by the system. And there are real people in the sustainability departments that are trying incredibly hard. The example about running the bakery, if it's not a bakery, it's a school. If it's not a school, it's a tire workshop. It's a biscuit factory, you know. And the constant messaging we're getting from companies is that we are not in the business of social development. We are in the business of mining. If we need to pay something towards something to do it, we'll do it. But I don't know how to run a bakery. And there's another fundamental issue we need to deal with. Who is that person that is? Is it the state's responsibility? The problem is that we found through various engagements, and many of these companies are members of the chamber, they said that, you know, these projects fail when we hand them over, and we feel personally responsible for them, because it becomes their baby, it becomes what they want, and people are happy about it and everything, and then they pass it over and it dies. So, yes, sympathetic, absolutely, but I think it's a question of corporate culture as well. And if we need to instill regulations to ensure corporate culture is positive, then maybe that's the way we need to do it. Rob, if you want to answer some of the main questions.
I also think that, at least in my mind, I separate what companies are good at doing with companies' obligations. I would say, given my understanding of South African history, and given my own socialist politics, companies, the resources in the country have largely been, historically have been stolen from the majority of people. And a lot of the companies, that's the kind of footing that communities of companies, where people don't have the capacity or even to actually benefit from these resources. So I think companies have obligations to communities, positive development obligations. I think that's a separate thing from saying whether companies should be so directly involved in projects where they're good at doing bakeries and that. I think that is problematic. We need to find a system where companies contribute resources to transformation, but without having to play to their weaknesses. And I think also, I mean, we kind of understand where the ruling party in government is, that this is certainly not blaming. In fact, the fact that the SRP system is the first of its kind in the world means that, and from our point of view, that we're not surprised that very many things have gone wrong and haven't worked as intended. I think it is an experimentation and a learning process on something that actually around the world, what at least based on our cursory and literary review done so far, is that around the world there hasn't been mining overall around the world, in whatever country, in every context, harms over all the people that live near mines. I think by bringing the power of the state and the capacity of the state to protect communities, I think that our SLP system in that respect is a step forward. And I don't think we should back off from that. I think the regulatory aspect is a progressive step which we recognise and laud. I think what it needs to include is communities as a full partner in the process of formulating that, which is then overseen by the state. But I think, I mean, I was speaking to a number of role players, including trade unions that helped advanced the idea of SLP, and they admitted that the lack of detail in part was they thought that they were hopeful that things would more, through collective bargaining, that things would fall into place more than they did. So it's definitely not, from our point of view, it's definitely not from a position of the government of blame, and we actually want to kind of assist government realize transformation. I think it's a very important question, and I understand the difficulty of companies to know and government to know who the community is. But I do think, as my colleague said, that like really good, firstly kind of people, you know, people who can actually analyze, do a power map of the different role players in an area is important, but also also understanding the different medias in different channels for which people get information. Because one thing is that if you have an open meeting that it's designed in a way, no, it's not perfect, it's never going to reach everyone, but it's designed to reach a wide range of role players, including local radio stations, newspapers that people read. If people are aware of it, then different interests can arrive at the meeting, and no difficulties. These things can work out, and a structure for that SLP can be worked out. And I think Chief Mandela, I completely agree that traditional leaders are important role players. But at the same time, I think that it's important also not to reduce even customary communities to traditional leadership. In our instances around the country, I mean, not in the communities that we did our research, but we know of instances where customary communities don't actually have a traditional leader. And so I think it's being responsive to kind of the way communities decide to make decisions about the communal land, which has a role for traditional leaders, but not necessarily an uncontested role. And very often, it'll be quite easy to find out that there are organizations that are formal organizations formed in communities, such as land buyers associations, EDL, that are also important role players and which need to be engaged, and who can be identified relatively easily. With regards to, I think there was also a question with regards to kind of what should the consequences be for non-compliance. Insofar as SLP is, from our point of view, is that kind of give back, and that's kind of measure to ensure that the people whose land the mining is happening, or one whose land the mining is happening next to, benefit from. It's such a core objective of the entire system, basically, deconstructing a legacy of an economic apartheid and class inequality. And so, from that point of view, these are very serious obligations, and the ultimate consequence of non-compliance, all else fails, should be with the withdrawal of license. Having said that, we do understand the immense amount of, often a mining operation will employ thousands of people, and you don't want, and closure should be really a lot at all, so the consequences are immense. I think in that regard, I think we need to really, the remedies that should be used the most often are that space between the warning and the Section 93 notice and demanding compliance, but after that, actually going into the area of sort of on criminal liability for directors and significant and serious and large fines for companies for non-compliance. Because in a way, the fine, it actually punishes the draft MPRDA bill, where it's moving towards, if it's like paid at a percentage of profits and not just a number, which will vary, if it's a huge company, it's nothing, if it's a small company, it's crippling, it will pose a real cost to companies, but at the same time, not halting operations, particularly where workers are dependent on operations for livelihoods. So I would say criminal penalties and administrative fines are the territory that kind of can do the most work in responding to non-compliance. Thank you.
Honorable Smith had a concern about profitability of the mining operation.
I think that's what one of the recommendations which Louis was talking about, which is around commodity fluctuations and what happens when things change. Our view has always been that effective planning can work to alleviate some of those things. So like Louis was talking about, having a rainy day fund when it's less profitable to run those initiatives, so that that fund exists. And planning is a central part of what we're talking about, because then it can work towards fixing a lot of those problems. So having proper plans around role and who you give responsibilities to means that you don't have engineers running bakeries, because now you've put in place proper people. So you said within the scope of the available funding, we can get someone to run the bakery. And that may mean that perhaps the projects that you run, because you're getting more personnel, are smaller or less projects. But it means that you are able to ensure the effectiveness of those projects, which we think is centrally important. Because as we said throughout, where there isn't proper planning, it means that you don't get any benefit at all. If the engineer doesn't know how to properly run the bakery, and like he said, he was struggling, it means that that bakery's efficiency is reduced, and it means that there's no proper output for the people involved, and that doesn't necessarily help anyone. So it would be better to reduce the scope of that project by perhaps getting more personnel, but that means that you're still able to have the outcomes that you need from that project. From a consultation point of view, many of the problems that occur with consultation, and particularly where you talk about people not coming to meetings and there being often different people who come to meetings, happen as a result of distrust, because people don't trust that consultation process, because that process is done simply to tick a box so that they can move on and get their mining right. They don't get a sense that they're being consulted meaningfully in a way that they can say no, they can contribute, and they can say there should be change. So people don't see the point of coming to those meetings. Even if you look at the Tolobeni example, when there was a meeting, people got the sense that this meeting wasn't about consultation, but it was about informing you what's going to happen and then going away, which is why it is that there was so much trouble around that issue. So if the way in which consultation is done changes in the way that we're talking about here, and in the way that if you look at international finance instruments like the International Finance Corporation, the Development Bank, the many development banks, which put an emphasis on free, prior, and informed consent, and also stipulates you're supposed to provide experts for people so that they're able to understand the discussions that are happening, and you're supposed to set different stages of those discussions. If all those are put in place and discussion becomes more meaningful, we think that that means people are able to trust that process more. And at the beginning, there may not be as many people who come to those meetings, but we think that it's self-reinforcing that as you go on and do it in an honest way, you conduct consultations in an honest way, then people get trust and you get more and more people at meetings in future. It's true that it often doesn't work when you do it through ward committees. Councillors have different levels of efficiency. Some of them don't decide to go to work at all. Some of them are always there and in the communities. So that's something that would differ from community to community, but we think that if it works through, if consultation is done through the community as a whole, then that's something that you're able to do, with more reliability than depending on how good the councillor you have in a particular ward is. In terms of traditional communities, it's a difficult question, Honourable Chief, because like Robert has said, that not all communities have traditional leadership, but even in other communities, there isn't always agreement about who the legitimate traditional leader is in that community, especially when you get up towards the Northwest, where people say, we don't know this person that's claiming to be our traditional leader, or there wasn't a traditional leader in that community for 20, 30, 40 years, and then someone arrives and says, I'm the traditional leader of this community, and I've always been the traditional community, the leader of this community. So the majority of the problems aren't necessarily with traditional communities where there's established structure that consults. It's about where that doesn't happen and where there are those flaws, where there isn't a proper council that consults with the community and brings the community's views forward, where it's a person saying, I'll take 100,000 in order to approve to approve what is happening. It's where people are trying to use the mining companies to consolidate their power that communities are rejecting, where there are the biggest problems with traditional leadership in terms of traditional communities. On the question of on the question of local government shirking its responsibility and turning it over to mines, I think that a lot of how that would work can be answered by the recommendations which we have about aligning what happens in terms of IDP processes and SLPs, where there's a clear understanding, firstly, what the IDP does, and then where in that mining companies fit, so that it isn't just a case of one trying to replace the other, but it's about plugging gaps and them working together so as to get the outcomes that both essentially want. The problem there is, again, that IDPs themselves aren't necessarily done or created in the most transparent ways. Some companies, and the DMR has also said to us that if the mining company reads the IDP, they can use that as a basis for how they draft their SLP without the need to consult the community. And in a theoretical world where there's been extensive consultation in the IDP process, the aspirations of that community would be represented in that document. But in the majority of instances, that isn't necessarily the case. It's just a document that's been thrown up behind closed doors, and the community have had no say. Some communities have never even seen an IDP document, have no clue what one looks like. Some have no idea what it even is, or one exists for their community. So just approaching local government and reading the IDP is not necessarily enough for the aspirations of the community to be captured. And the sad part is that the mining company is always the one that people identify. These are the people who are poisoning the water, or whatever the case may be. So we want commensurate benefit from these people. And if that process worked a bit better, we think that might fix some of those problems.
Okay. Thank you very much. Look, I think the first thing that was must say as an observation, the difficulty is that besides being lawyers, they are speaking to committee members. For now, I can confirm only one researcher in this house. That is Dr. Nicole. Now I'm questioning my capacity to interrogate something that is a finding on the research as a committee. Or else to look on how to process what has been discovered in the research work that has been done, and then be able to say how best can we look at this. I think it's important also to share this. Probably you might have interacted with the Department of Mineral Resources, but they came to make a presentation. I think some of the issues that you are raising, as you are presenting, they seem to be areas of on what they were suggesting or proposing in the mining charter review process. For an example, the issue of the centrality of corporate governance, in particular the role of municipalities, the linkages of the SLPs to the LED processes. But also they went a step further to say that, what do they call this thing? Let me use it myself now. No, don't worry. I'm the only one, I'm more powerful than the speaker. I'm the only one who can attend a meeting, not the bells. Now, one of the things that they were suggesting is a proximity integrated development strategy of mining companies
to say rather than one mining company among its own suggested SLP will build the school, and then next door there's another one that says we'll build the school. They look what could be the common interest that they can take common ownership on what they will do. So if there's a need to build a school, a clinic or whatever, I'm just making examples, then they all take collectively and therefore they get measured. They also put intervals on how to do assessment of the SLPs, the quota on how much then could be a contribution towards the SLPs. I think it will be quite an interesting, which is what I wanted to suggest to honorable members, in acceptance of the invitation in advance, although it's not here now, to say probably that what could be more interesting is that forum, where, because the other thing is that looking at the report, you are actually giving us more what you would say on the work that you are doing, the progress so far, but it's not a final report. Including, because it would be more interesting also to see whether the toolkit will be talking to what you are suggesting as the areas that require to be affirmed, or which is what you don't want to go to, and I understand and I think it's appreciated, whether the mechanism that is being used, the not the kit, but the tool itself, is it a correct one to be used? I think you'll be more free in an environment where you are in authority rather than the one where you are an invited guest yourself, so that you don't influence committee members on what they do in your presentation. So the point I was saying was that if it's a research, the first thing would be to get the final product of the research, where you could say with certainty, this is what we do, this is what we are suggesting, this is the format that we think it will work, and therefore, if it is the format, because I think you will have to even go into detail. It's not a defensive argument. I may not agree with Honorable Schmidt. I don't want to accuse you and say maybe you say. You must also hear the other side. Now, all that I know, researchers are researchers, so you are not aligned. The methodology you use, I may not know whether it's a correct methodology or not. That's why I'm saying the difficult with the research, it requires also people who may have the levels of expertise on research work. So I wanted to say, honorable members, one, looking at this issue, it may be assisting us because we did say that when part of that work that, by the way, the Department of Mineral Resources said is the most outstanding on the review of the mining charter is the consultation with communities, which I think we then said, if you then come, you have not done with the committee. I think this could also assist members in terms of interrogating that what is being suggested as the final product in the review of the some of the issues that are here, including the definition or understanding of communities, are things that are also contained in the proposed amendment to the MPRDA, which is now a subject that is being handled by the NCOP. I hope they will now have a better understanding on what is being proposed. I wanted to suggest that, one, we noting the presentation that has been, it now helps us as a portfolio committee to have a deeper understanding of what are the key challenges, including which I think it will be things that will come up clear. The proposed framework, whether we not go, because the reason I was saying there are two views most of the time. There is a view that says the industry is highly regulated. Now it seems to are suggesting other forms of regulations beyond policy that will require to be legislated. We should be able to understand what could be the contents of that legislative process that you are suggesting. Because if it's just left and say it's just here, it might require to be contained contained in legislation or regulation. We should then be able to understand have that minimum picture of what could be the projected regulations that could work on that. So I wanted to suggest that we take this issue and say, with your, I did something when someone one person once said when he was opening the address, he said in conclusion. So when I was looking at your page, I started in the conclusion on the background where you say members of the Minerals Portfolio Committee, together with core role players in the national government, local government, communities, labor, the mining industry, and the media will be invited to our launch. Now, I think that is where we will get the festival of ideas, which will also give the other side on how do we look at what is the report. So I wanted to say, look, why don't we look for that, where we could tackle also the issues that were raised by Honorable Mukwena. I don't think we can engage now, not that we are running away from it, including the interpretation of what the Freedom Charter is the base of transformation says in terms of the issue of the mineral wealth beneath the soil. We can have that. That will be more that there will be a festival of ideas, including different researches that have been done, but also what is currently in existence. Can't we then say that if then it requires, having had those festival of ideas where even ourselves, if we're participating, if there is a need now on the what is being proposed as a final product, there is a need to then re-invite and say, with that engagement that has come up, surely you will have to find a way of balancing now what you think is an overall buy-in exercise. Then you may say, come back to this committee, let's now look at the final product, especially where there's been an input of all the key role and stake role players. Can't we leave it at that level, Honorable Members? Honorable Schmidt?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I agree. Except that there's two issues I'd just like to maybe not even get an answer on, but maybe which could, at a further engagement, just kind of as a springboard or a clonkboard, as they put in Afrikaans. And that is, you made the statement that the purpose of the SLP is to ensure that when the mine closes, and I think you used the word heartbeat, that it would be something continue beating or something, that the economic activity would continue. But is, and I'm asking the question because that is a kind of a point of departure issue. Isn't the LED of a local government the purpose of that? And doesn't the social labor plan fit into the LED? The social labor plan, primarily, as I understand it, is there to ensure that social issues are dealt with during the existence of the mine, labor issues are dealt with during the existence of the mine, and something else should deal with or ensure the survivability of that environment, the social structure, fiber, as well as the local economic development of that town. So I'm just asking because it may have been a more fleeting comment rather than a considered view, because if that is your point of departure, there may be a fundamental problem, because it doesn't. On its own, the mine cannot ensure the survivability of that society after it closes. Something else must ensure that. I'll give you the example of Eniging van der Berg, where I come from, with ArcelorMittal, which is a steel company, closed down, and with it, the economic viability of that mine reduced by many percentage points. So I'm just giving that. The second issue which you should consider, not necessarily an answer, but shouldn't, like all budgets, you've got a three-year budget, five-year budget, 10-year budget, whatever budget, shouldn't one have that as a more workable tool, saying SLP should consist of a three-year budget, a five-year budget, 10-year budget, or whatever budget I'm just giving. Because planning for underground service, if a mine were to do that on that scale, takes years just to implement, get the vehicles there. It takes years of planning. And now you've run out of a five-year term. I'm giving an example. So one should consider those issues.
Honorable, I appreciate it when you're moving, Honorable Schmidt, because I'm sure those issues are those that will become the final product of what they are suggesting. And also probably so that we don't put them, that's the understanding that they have, which could be a common understanding that we are having also on the role of the SLPs. And therefore the big question would be, which the final product I think we'll have to address.
would you need SLPs as a commonly stand-alone intervention? And if then there's an argument that says they should be linked to the LED, which should be the ones that are leading local economic development objectives, and therefore they become just one part of an intervention, it therefore means that that question, one may sit and then it may not necessarily arise if that's how we look on the issues of the LED. I think that's the point that they were saying, that for me, I thought they are moving towards to say, if you don't need the SLPs in the current format that they are, they should be linked to integrated development strategies, particularly at the level of local government as a lead entity. Then it actually means if it's for long term, that LED must plan beyond the existence of the mine, not to plan according. But I'm saying even now, whether do we have even ourselves as a committee on the interventions that are related to the SLP? Because the SLPs themselves, they should also be, if now we're to treat them separately, they should be responding to a situation that what you found, you might have found there at the point of entry, may have permanent consequences in the community, even when you are no longer there. And therefore, should we then say SLPs must only plan as an intervention in the interim? And then what happens beyond that? So even if you were to deal with them separately, we should also understand that that intervention that is being made may be consequential. And therefore, how do those consequences? But I'm not going to say they shouldn't respond if they want to respond. But I thought, to me, the final product will be the one to even say, in the integration, I'm just making an example, if the conclusion say the issue of the SLP should be looked in the context of integration into the LED processes, it should then tell us how it should be able to do so. For now, I think it's more like a suggestion and a projection that it's what has to be done. So there can still be bigger questions there, because the next question would be, let me be hypothetical again, what if there is no capacity at the level of the municipalities? And therefore, to see, he made an example for an example, even for the department itself, in terms of, is there capacity to monitor the SLPs? Now, that's a department which is much bigger than a municipality in terms of what it's supposed to do. I know some municipalities, by the way, they pay more than the state, the provincial and national government do, but not all of them. Some of them are subject and dependent on the grants that they receive from the state. So I think even that one is not an easy, straightforward exercise, because you may find that some of these municipalities may not have the capacity to monitor or find the best mechanisms, and therefore we may be running into the same thing you're complaining about, of using huge consultants who may consume the very same work that the municipalities are supposed to be doing. So I'm saying maybe the actual nitty-gritties and the actual exercise can only be answered. I'm interested to see the final product of what they are going to be coming. That's why I said studying this may also give me to consult the methodology that was used in the research work. But you can answer that question. But there is a mover that we follow that route. Before I ask for a second, because after I ask for a second, there may be no basis to comment on the matter. If you want to comment on it.
Thank you, Honorable Member Chair. I think, absolutely, I think these are crucial questions that need to be answered. I think these are fundamental questions that need to come out of this. I think the proposal is correct, and I think we also, in the study itself, you will see a section that has been dedicated to methodology. We could even amend that with these kinds of suggestions that I put forward.
Okay. Any second? Baba Mkwena is seconding. Why do you want Honorable Matlala to point at Honorable Mkwane? Is it because you came late together? Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much with your presentation. I think to be honest, we can't underestimate the work that you have done. Sitting here, it would have been much more productive if we had received this briefing probably prior the department when it came here to make the just to brief us on the review process. But fortunately, the process is not yet over, and from time to time we'll still engage with them, and I think it's going to help ourselves as honorable members to do the work as much collectively as possible. So thank you very much, and even for your voluntary service. We want to go to that one. We know that you are adverse. Those who would want to take it further, they can. But I think it's quite an enriching presentation that you've made. And with your shortness, honorable members, let me not be unfair to yourselves. Fear, take no offense. If you receive the minutes now, I know you are very intelligent. Each one of you was placed here. It was based on the belief that the best brains in your political parties had to come to this committee. But I can't abuse that. Can we allow you to go read the minutes, and we will finalize the, at least you must get them even at the start of the meeting. Can we allow you the privilege and honor, respect, that you deserve, that we will deal with the minutes as two sets of minutes in the next committee meeting next week. Next week, we are dealing with the issue of the mining in Ndaba, and we expect that the department and the Chamber of Mines will be here to assist us with the not just the preparations for this mining endeavor, but to what extent can we be able to work collectively in ensuring that the mining endeavor achieved the desired expectations, and then we'll also deal with the issue of the Lily Mine. On that note, honorable members, I don't like to release you so early, but you are released. See you next week. Thank you very much.